So how's this going for you? If you're new with us today, it's like this every weekend. We like awkward. We like painful. Yeah, if you're just walking in, we're experimenting with a microcosm of Sabbath. 6 minutes on, 1 minute off. 6 minutes on, 1 minute off. The ushers are going to come forward, and you guys got to really go fast. Don't want to have the lights go down in the middle of the bag full of money on somebody's lap. I'm putting in 100. Can you imagine just putting 100 in? Anywho. If you're new with us, it's always awkward. What goes on in our minds when what's supposed to flow, it stops flowing? What goes on in our minds when our addiction to things continuing to move, you can't stop moving? What happens in our minds? I mean, some of us, we're sitting here and we're like, okay, the first couple times, oh, that's a cute idea. By the fourth one, it's like, really? A whole hour? This is what we're doing? The stop, start, this jerky thing that's happening. Some people are sitting here, and you're not bad people. Some of you are annoyed. I bet some people have walked out. I can't do this, man. Let's just get on with it. I get the point. But our contention would be similar to maybe God's contention is, I don't think we do. I don't think maybe we actually believe what God is trying to tell us. What goes on in our minds? In our society, that our constant movement, constant motion. And we use words like success and gain and achievement and more. Abstract words that can never be achieved. They're not evil until they become the source of addiction. We just cannot shut it down. Some of us on staff have become friends with a local restaurant owner, and it had come to our attention this past week that the owner of this restaurant, he hasn't had a day off in a year. No vacation, no weekends, nothing. Every day for a year. So I went in there after hearing that, and I wasn't going to call him out or anything. I went in there to buy some food, and he comes out of the back office, and his eyes are completely bloodshot, and tears are streaming down his face, and he just didn't look good. And I said, bro, are you okay? You don't look okay. He said, I got a migraine. Used to get them just at night, but now I'm getting them in the day, and this is the worst one I've ever had, and he's a grown man, and I think he's crying. It hurts him so bad. So we went back and forth a little bit, and I said, man, with respect to what you're doing here, why are you here? Go home. He said, I can't. Unbelievable, unmatched pain. He can't leave. He runs the place. He can't leave. Why? Because there's a structure that he's allowed to be in place, that he's endorsed, and he's able to justify. We're always able to justify things that aren't best. It's a structure in place that won't allow him to leave. If he leaves, he believes that the ship will sink. He can't leave. So I'm there for about half an hour. And after about half an hour, I see him grab a bottle of Excedrin and set it on a table. And he's squinting. It's the only way he can even see. And he says to a couple employees across the room, he said, I got to go. I'm leaving. If I get better, I'll come back. And he goes to the door. And then he turns around and he says, don't forget to order. And he names off some ingredients. And then squinting and starting to hunch over, he walks out. And then he comes back in and he says, don't forget, payroll is over on the counter. And I'm watching a man that cannot stop. He can't. And he could tell you why, and it would sound smart. He can't quit. He can't stop. He believes it's a survival issue. My daughter and I have been working on a project for her mom. It's a secret. We've been building it every couple of evenings. And the other day, she's like, Daddy, can we go work on it a little bit again? Daddy, can we please go work on it again? Can we work on it every 5 minutes? And every 5 minutes, I'm like, look, I just, honey, don't want to do that right now. And over and over and over, she's asking me. I'm like, I'm just really not in the mood to have glue in my hands right now, baby girl. I just let Daddy sit here. She's 8 years old. She just loves to build. And finally, she holds up my phone that's sitting next to me. She goes, Daddy, you can bring this and play on it if you want to. Just be in the room with me. And I said, forget you for judging me. And I screamed at her. See, my daughter realizes sometimes I'm just playing games, but often I just have to know if I've got an email. I've got to know who's saying what on Twitter. My daughter knows at 8 years old that sometimes I just can't stop. My children recognize there are moments when I'm a corpse, that I seem to be present and I'm not. And she is learning to settle for that. Daddy, bring the phone. At least your body will be present. Because sometimes I just cannot stop. I cannot cease to produce. And I can't turn it off. Can't stop moving. I can't stop knowing. I can't stop checking the pulse on the machine. Some people would describe death as the moment when your soul and your body separate, when you expire, when your spirit exits. It's not supposed to be that way. The person has died. Their inner self has disconnected from their outer self. A lot of people would define in their own way that's really what death is. You separate from you. But I'm trying to figure out what to call it when my body is present and it's alive, but my inner world is somewhere else, tending to its addictions, worrying, ruminating, thinking about what's going on at the office, thinking about the interests of another geography, thinking about the momentum of a project, thinking about how something I'm working on might be perceived, worrying. What do you call it when, man, your body's not dead, but certainly your soul is not present? I'm fascinated with how the brain works. In some of our cases, doesn't. And it turns out that there is good stress and bad stress, and believe it or not, bad stress is bad. It's free. Information for you today. Profound teaching that this is. Living in bad stress persistently, chronic bad stress. People call it, scientists, they call it an allostatic load. Your innermost part of your brain, that down at the base where all your base reactions happen, they really say a lot about your overall health condition. Now, for a long time, we've been saying, oh, you shouldn't worry. Worrying doesn't do any good, and you're just going to worry yourself sick and all that. But what we're finding in recent medical science, I'm part of that lot. Steve, what do you think? I'll get back with you. I'm working on my research. No, what they are finding and then telling us in chunks that we can comprehend is that we really are killing ourselves down to a level of just fundamentally what we are. We actually kill ourselves with chronic stress, this allostatic load. You're at the base, most simplest part of your brain, that your amygdala is what kicks in when you decide very instantaneously that you're in danger, you're under threat. Something's going to harm you. And so you have the three responses that we all know about: fight, flight, or freeze. I'm going to swing a punch, I'm going to take off running, or I'm going to do deer in the headlights. They're all survival responses. Now, very few of us ever live in a world where those responses have really any applicability. It's very rare. But our brain keeps telling us, no, you're under threat. Somebody can say something and the fight, flight, or freeze response kicks in. Our amygdala tells us that we're in danger when we're not in the kind of danger that your amygdala needs to be involved with. And so they call that an amygdala hijack. And so you have all of this, these hormones, these stress hormones that are steroids, your adrenal glands start pumping, and your whole body goes into, how do I respond to this mode? I've got to turn this into paralysis. I've got to turn this into an evacuation. I have to turn this into an all-out war. And your mind has been completely hijacked. Daniel Goleman was doing research on this decades ago, and he did something really interesting. He hooked a group of people up to these little sensors that measured sweat and heart rates and stress overall. And then he showed them a video that was supposed to inspire woodworkers to use their safety equipment and pay attention. So they got this room full of people and a projector, and then they're measuring the monitor to see how they're responding. As you can see, Mac is cutting wood. And he's pushing the log, and it's zooming in on his hand. As you can see, Mac is talking to George, and his thumb is getting closer and closer and closer. And he says you don't even have to watch the TV, watch the projector anymore. You can just watch the heart rates, and you can tell the thumb incident is coming. And then all of a sudden, it spikes. He said you can tell just by watching their hearts when Mac cuts his thumb off. The whole group goes, oh, and has a visceral physiological stress response. But then you start to calm down, but he doesn't let them recover. Immediately, he shows them scenario two. Another scenario where the climax is an injury. But see, this time they're not starting at zero. They're starting at three, four, five. And so now when the climactic scene comes, the spike, the climactic spike is even bigger. And then he doesn't let them recover. He shows them a third one. Now they're not starting at four or five. Now they're at eight. And at this climax, literally at the scene, the danger scene, the injury scene, they go off the charts. This is persistent anxiety. This is a failure to recover. When you get up in the morning after your alarm clock, you've started your day at three. Then you go out and you're trying just to do breakfast and clothes for the kids, and his pants are on backward, which wouldn't be a big deal, but he's 15. You didn't come to this moment at zero. You came to this at three or four, and now you're at a six. And then you get to work and you have an insensitive boss. You have, not to mention all the idiots in traffic, and then all of your coworkers and all the things that are going on. And then the customers that continue to demand to be treated like they're right, which that's such a stupid idea. Customers are not always customers. And you're going into it at three and then at six and then at 10, and you're But if you ever say that to me again, just asking him how the sweat's doing. I'm sitting here talking about stress, and I look like I've got Rick James in a headlock. Sorry. 17 people know who Rick James is. What was I yelling about? Brains. Jesus. Stress at work. It's this persistent chronic overwhelm has us never getting back to zero. We're never restarting. We're always starting at an elevated moment. And so it's never really fair how we come into a conversation if we didn't recover. It's never fair how we go in to do some work. It's never fair how we start on Monday. because we don't recover. We stay in persistent overwhelm. It renders everything something to run away from, to be paralyzed by, or just to start an all-out war. Now, what's so incredible is that all of us want to be enlightened. We want to grow in knowledge and in wisdom. We all want that in our own way. That's what we're all after. When you're in constant stress and you never recover, your adrenal glands are releasing something called cortisol. It's the get you ready kind of natural internal drug. Your hippocampus in your brain is the primary place where your short-term memories turn into long-term memories. It's a seat of learning. And so you want the hippocampus really functioning well all the time. But the interesting thing is it has a lot of receptor sites for cortisol. And so if you've got cortisol and persistent chronic stress, that allostatic load, if you've got it there, the hippocampus is saying, yeah, I'll take those. And it severely diminishes your ability to learn. Literacy, mathematics, all diminished by somewhere around 50%. Easy things that you could know. Cortisol kind of seals over all of that in your hippocampus. Now, this is why this is interesting. We don't want to stop because we're scared we're going to miss out on growing. We hate stopping because of fear of lost respect, fear of loss of productivity that has subsequent effects. The reason we can't stop is because if we keep going, we're growing, right? Momentum, gain. Nobody's getting ahead. The reason we keep going is because we believe it's what we need. And while we continue to be unable, willfully unable to stop, our very physiology is saying, you realize you're not growing right now. You realize that the little sheath over all your neurons is getting weak. The synapses, all the conversations that go on within your body so that you function, you realize all that's breaking down. You realize you're not dealing with insulin very well right now. You realize you're breaking down your ability to digest. You realize you're killing yourself. But in what you think you're doing is trying to achieve life. On a fundamental level, if we can't stop, we're killing ourselves. Absolutely killing ourselves. So in Deuteronomy, Moses is given the law, and it's rehashed in a couple of different ways, but the law, Torah, the enlightenment that's given, and within which is the Ten Commandments. And we've been going through these commandments one at a time each week. And today we're talking about Sabbath. But overall, listen to how the conversation between Moses and God and by proxy the Israelites, listen to how this is viewed. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, it says, now Israel, listen to these statutes and these rules that I'm teaching you, and this is key, and do them that you may what? Not that you can become better than other people, not so that you'll be worthy of being in a temple, a synagogue, a church, or something like that. No. What God's interest is centered on is life. Do understand the heart behind these things, because I am interested in your very living, in your very real day-to-day, not that one moment in time, but that very real day-to-day life. Listen to these, get at these, do them that you can live. A couple verses later, verses 5 through 7. See, this is Moses speaking now. I've taught you the statutes and the rules as Lord. It's Lord is in all caps. That means in Hebrew, it's God's name, Yahweh. As Yahweh, my God, commanded me that you should do them in the land that you're entering to take possession of. Keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding, enlightenment, your growth, your personal development. In the sight of the peoples who, when they hear all these statutes, they're going to say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. I mean, these people are really put together. These people know how to live. Man, I really envy their higher sense of living, learning, speaking. They're going to say, for what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as Yahweh, our God, is to us whenever we call upon him? This is a huge statement, because gods are something you go try to find up a mountain in a temple. It says, what nation has a God that actually goes near to it like ours does? Who gets involved in our life, not in our religion, but in our life, and says things like, if you'll listen to me, it equals life for you. What nation? And so the fifth commandment, or the fourth commandment, excuse me, is in the next chapter. Deuteronomy chapter 5. Observe the Sabbath day. Keep it holy. Keep it different. This is a different moment. That's what holy means. Set it to the side and see it. Live in it differently. As the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do and make and produce all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to Yahweh Elohim. On it you shall not do any work, you, your kids, your male or female servant, your ox, donkey, pets. I don't know what work a cat does, but I assume they're included in the heart behind the text. Or the sojourner who's within your gates, guests, people, you invite them into this. So your male and female servants may rest as well as you. You shall remember, this is so key. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Past tense. And the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day holy. Exodus chapter 31, verse 12, the Lord said to Moses, you're to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all. Now, this is after the command, 613 commands, and then the top 10 is the Decalogue. Above all, most significantly, above all, keep my Sabbaths. Because this is a sign or a covenant between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify, which means holyify you. This is going to be a sign of our relationship. The first time holy is used in the Bible is in relation to the Genesis story of every, you know, the Adam and Eve and everything being made. And the first time the word holy is used is that last day, the cessation of productivity. To stop creating. Now, many cultures at that time had things that they considered holy, sanctified, set apart, seen, lived in, thought of differently. For some, it was an idol, an icon, a statue, that this I know is made of stuff that around it isn't holy, but once you get it all formed and put together, now it's holy. And so you have iconography and holy statues and that sort of thing. In other cultures, you have sacred geography, like God or this religion or this spirit can only be found in this particular piece of geography. And so you have to go here or you have to go here and there in this order. So sacred geography is a very common thing in religion. But God, from the very beginning, is saying, yeah. But what we're going to do is we're going to make time holy. Because you can have statues and you can have geography, you can have holy stuff. But if you sanctify, holyify time, now we're talking about how you live. The other things are about stuff that you say outside. You make time holy. Ah, see, now we're talking about how you and I actually live. God is saying this to a group of people who have been enslaved in Egypt for hundreds of years. He's saying this to a social conscience that believes that their worth is tied to their ability to make bricks for the machine. Over and over and over, we have to keep this in their mind. He says these principles of Sabbath, this day of rest. He says it to these people because in their social thinking, in their group think, their continued movement, their continuing to make is a life or death issue. We're slaves. And God says, you were slaves. Your cessation from productivity is how people are going to know that you're different. You getting your source of life from who I am, not from what you make. You taking time in your week to stop making is going to tell people who I am and who you are because of it. Absolutely a different, mind-blowing, difficult idea. So there's this scenario that happens thousands of years later with Jesus in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2. It reads this way. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as they, he and his disciples, were making their way, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. They were eating them. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Aha, look, why are they doing what's not lawful on the Sabbath?" And Jesus said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the bread of the presence, the fancy loaf of bread, which isn't lawful for any to do but the priest to eat. And then he gave it to those who were with him. And then he said to him, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man's Lord, even of the Sabbath.'" See, religion would say that. Your fault. Religion would say that the man is for the Sabbath, that the point is the Sabbath. But Jesus goes, you realize you've got it backwards. The Sabbath was made for man. It's a gift. Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand, and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they can accuse him. And Jesus said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." And then he said to them, "I've got a trick question for you. Is it okay on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save life, to mend life, or to kill?" And they were smart. They were silent. A couple verses later, after he heals this guy, it says Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea. Oh, wait. Jesus, you're not really saying that there's no more cripples. No. So I'm done. That's it for now. We got to push pause. Sabbath is about life. It's about healing. It's about restoration. It's about recovery down to your physiology. Sabbath is about rejecting the idea that you're still a slave. God tells the Israelites, like I think he tells us, you're not a slave. Your life is more than the sum total of the things that you do or are expected to perform and do. Those things are important, and do them diligently. Work hard. But then stop. Your inability to stop is fear of loss of place, loss of resource, somebody else getting ahead, somebody getting something or some time that you're not going to have. God says, no, that's how slaves talk. You're not a slave. When are you going to stop thinking like one? When are you going to courageously step into the life that I have for you? My first job was bagging groceries, and that night after my first day, I dreamt all night long of the motion of putting groceries in bags. All night long. Because I think our brains really, really just, they just defaulted to the idea that you are what you do. And it was going, okay, this is what we are now. Let's rewire. But it's a lie. When do you shut down? When do you push pause? When are you unavailable to other people, but so you're totally available to those that you actually do life with and your family? When do you stop checking Facebook? When do you actually turn your phone off? Pre-cell phones, everybody survived. Well, it's an emergency. I understand. Turn it off. That's the real emergency, because you're slowly dying. That's the emergency. When are you unavailable to everybody else? When do you shut it down? When do you have the guts to say, this is hard, but the spirit of Sabbath, I submit to you. Because you'll notice this isn't about a day. Some of us, okay, is it Saturday or Sunday? No. Paul says, don't let people judge you by the day. Colossians. You're missing out on the spirit of it. This is about who do you belong to? Whom do you serve? When do you shut down? Because God is inviting you into life. He's always inviting us into life. And part of that is knowing when to hit pause and say, not another word, not another bit of performance, not another rumination, not another worry. I stop. I'll pick this up later if it's worth it. I stop now. This is not what I am.
Christ in me, the hope of glory.